This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And boy, oh boy, do we have a great book today. But I just want to remind you that at the bottom of the hour, I have a brand new book buzz from Devon Miller. It is a children's book, a book that you should not miss. So stay tuned for that, and that will be at the bottom of the hour from our special correspondent, Devon Miller. But right now, I get to turn to an author whose books just thrill me because they are thrillers. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, back to Joy on Paper. First of all, I want to say that at the beginning of the year, it is so great to start off with a really fantastic author. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper for this book called Fire Trap. It is a wonderful, wonderful book, and it is by Otho Eskin. And Otho Eskin is the real deal because he knows Washington, and his books are set in Washington. Hi, Otho.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Oh, wow, wow.
I'm happy to be joining you again. So, yes, let's go ahead.
Yes, because this, well, you know, this is book three. And I remember when I read the first book, the first one, I the opening sentence was so great and frightening. And then when we talked last time and we were talking about Headshot, I thought that opening was so great. So I'm always, you know, I know when I get your book, it's going to be a great opening.
And well, I hope you did, so. I try.
You try and you succeed, because I remember when in the first book, it opens with, she looks at me through 3 feet of water. And I remember thinking, I think she's dead.
Yeah, well,
I think so.
You were right.
So, you know, I remember I said, I got to find out what's going on here. And now, and then the second book, that action scene in Marco Zorn's front yard was exciting, but the new one, you know, you just come out right there. We're facing a big fire and you know, a roaring inferno, not just a fire.
That's right.
And as somebody who once had a Ford Explorer, I thought, I don't like that.
Well, I hope you didn't take it personally.
I did. And, of course, right away you get into Marco, and he is such a wonderful character. I think that of all the characters, you know, since I started this program in 2015, I've come, you know, across a lot of new characters, new series. And Marco is just somebody who sticks with me for so many reasons. In a little ways, he reminds me of my dad, because Marco is not real real strong on authority.
And, well, yes, yes, you and Marco, like, yes, he does not. He's an insubordinate kind of character. So you're right, quite right.
Yeah. So, and of course, you have the book set in one of my favorite cities. I love Washington, D.C. In the old days when one could still walk around, it was, you know, it was the only city in America where you really just, it was a joy to walk around, because I had lived in Europe for many years. And so, you know, I was used to walking around London. I was used to walking around Paris. And when I came back to America, it was Washington, D.C. that I found just absolute joy walking around the city. And
yes,
you make it come alive.
Well, I hope so. That Washington, D.C., the city itself, is one of the characters in the book, and I try to create that character in each book, as you see different aspects, different perspectives on the city. Some aren't so good. There's a lot of crime, and there's a lot of deceit and violence going on behind the scene, but on the surface, it's a lovely city to walk through. Absolutely, I agree, and I've lived there most of my life. So I know that city very well, and I've spent a lot of time walking the streets, visiting places, going to restaurants or going to the theater or just visiting the museums. It's a great city to walk around, and it can be a real joy.
Well, of course, that's why I said that you bring it to life, because you know it so well. And just a little background on you. I mean, it is so amazing, your background. I think why I thought of my dad with the, in thinking about your books, because you were in the U.S. Army, and my dad was in the Army too. And I remember at one point in his life, he could have had a battlefield commission. And he didn't want it because he wanted to stay with his guys. That was important to him.
Yes.
And so you were in the Army, you were in the United States Foreign Service, and you've worked all over the world. And I think all of that comes through in your knowledge of Washington and sort of how it works.
I try. Yeah, that's the purpose. I want to give that impression. As you say, I lived in Washington. I spent most of my life in the city, and in addition to being in the Army, I went to law school in Washington, and then was based in Washington for over 20 years when I was in the Foreign Service. Half that time abroad in embassies in other countries, half the time back in Washington. So I know the city very well, inside and out, for better or for worse, and I'm glad you share my pleasure in the city.
And I share your pleasure in Marco, because he is such a great character, and where you've drawn him down, he's, of course, a policeman, which you weren't, but obviously you've been around policemen enough that you certainly also bring this aspect of the book to life.
Well, I hope so. I certainly am delighted to hear that you find it that way, because that's what my aim was.
So tell us about Marco, and then we'll talk about what inspired this particular book.
Okay,
because
sure.
The way that you do, when an author comes across an idea and then they run with it, that's exciting.
Well, should I talk a little bit about Marco Zorn?
Yeah, let's talk about Marco first, because there's a little bit of mystery. We don't know everything about him.
No, well, okay. He's a homicide detective in the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police. He's a senior detective. He's very effective. He closes many cases, and some of the most difficult cases facing the police department. Marco Zorn can jump in and solve things. But he is a troublemaker. He's insubordinate. He does not like senior authority. He does not like senior officials. That was true when he was in the Army. He was basically a non-officer. He was an enlisted man at heart. And when he was in the police department, he works very well with the other cops, but he doesn't get along well with his bosses. His immediate boss is okay. He's learned to live with Marco and his strange ways. But Marco Zorn is insubordinate to any form of authority, and he'll, which makes trouble for his bosses. And until they learn to work with him and appreciate what he can do, there is a lot of tension. One of the things that happens in this novel, Fire Trap, is that he has a new chief of police who's been just assigned to Washington, and they have to learn how to live with one another. At one point, she actually fires Marco Zorin, because he's not operating in the normal way, and that has to be sorted out. Which, well, I don't want to spoil the end of the book, but it does get sorted out. Marco Zorin has very expensive tastes. He collects vintage sports cars. That's very expensive. He wears expensive shoes and suits. He goes to expensive restaurants, all of which is far beyond what he earns as a police officer. So we, as many police do, he has a job on the side, which from which he earns money, and they aren't always totally legal. He Marco Zorin has a very strong moral compass. He believes in the ethics and morality, but he doesn't mind bending the rules when he has to. And the other distinguishing feature about Marco Zorin is he hates to carry a gun in the D.C. police, and I assume in all police institutions. An officer on active duty is required to carry a gun. Marco Zorin says he's lost his. He does not like guns, and he absolutely abhors using it. He doesn't like using violence. That's not because of a political reasons or even ethnic. He has a dark side, which is only hinted at in the novels. But he is very concerned about being armed and being faced with an opponent where the showdown may be violent. He believes that faced with an opponent, he can talk him out of it, or talk her out of it in this case. And he's often right, and he can usually get away with not having to use violence in his investigations, and he will go to great lengths to avoid killing, or he doesn't kill people at all, not in these novels anyway. All of this stems back from an experience when he did kill a man who had raped his sister, and he took vengeance on him. And he, Marco Zorin knows that he has a potentially vengeful element in his character and wants to avoid that at all costs. So he goes through life trying to talk his way out of trouble. And he usually does. Not always.
Well, of course, he does it with style, and I like that he goes to fine restaurants, and that's my attitude too.
Yes.
Now, for this particular story, which you were inspired by certain things, what do you want to talk about? How you were inspired to write this this story?
Well,
and because it is timely, it is a subject that people are aware of, and I think it comes out at the right time.
Well, I hope so. I think you're right. Well, the basic inspiration for the story was reading about OxyContin and the Sackler family that was producing this drug, which has been resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of Americans and addiction of many, many more. When it's abused, which it has obviously been, it is a very dangerous drug, and there are early in the novel, Marco Zorin is informed that a street drug is being circulated in the community, which is highly addictive. He finds out later that fentanyl has been added to the drug, and it is highly addictive and frequently fatal. And he is, for complicated reasons, undertakes to try to stop the sale of this drug and find out who's behind it. And that's the basic story. He learns about a big pharma corporation that is producing this and is going to produce a new drug on the open market. And he undertakes to stop the sale of the drug and to bring the company and the owners of the company to justice, which is what the basic theme of the story is. The opponents turn out to be two twin psychopathic brothers who are genuinely evil. They're billionaires. They don't need money. They don't need anything else. They're quite elderly by the time the story starts. And they can they have everything they could possibly need, although they live in near poverty conditions. But they continue to promote and sell and market the drugs. And he eventually has to confront them. But in the meantime, they are murderers. They murder a whistleblower from their own company. They murder a scientist from the Food and Drug Administration, which is trying to look into these drugs that they're selling and to stop them. And eventually, they murder one of their partners who runs the corporation. They are unmitigatedly evil, and for no particular purpose. They just do it because they can get away with it, and out of pure vindictiveness. So Marco Zorn has a very dangerous and unpredictable enemy. I won't tell you how it ends, except that obviously Marco Zorn lives to appear in another novel later on. So what more can I tell you?
Well, that's good. I'm glad he's... I'm glad you are keeping him alive, and I'm sure you're working on book four, because this is going to be a long-lasting series. Marco is just too great.
I look forward to that.
You know, Big Pharma has so much to answer for, and I remember a number of years ago, I was in the hospital for a short period of time, and they have that chart on the wall, you know, with the faces, happy face, a smiley face, a less smiley face.
I remember that sign, yes.
Yes. So a nurse told me, a nurse said to me, don't tell them. And I said, what do you mean, don't tell them? She said, don't tell them about what face you are. She said, because what happens is that these boards that we thought came out, you know, because the hospitals wanted to be nice or the hospitals wanted to be helpful, it turns out these boards were part of the Big Pharma to try to get you to ask for more pain meds while you're in the hospital.
Is that right? And is that what she said? That's amazing.
Yeah, and I wasn't in any pain. I mean, thank goodness I wasn't in any pain. She said, it doesn't matter. If you put even one of those medium faces, they're going to hit you with pain meds. And she said, you don't want it. You don't want, they just want to keep giving you pain meds. They'll give you pain meds for anything. And she said, we have people who come in here who are not in pain, and they put out, they want the worst face. I mean, they're in agony just to get some pain meds. And she said, don't tell them. Don't play into the game of these pharmaceutical companies that want you to take pain meds when you don't need them. And
yes,
so.
Yes, you're quite right. And she's quite right. Big Pharma engages in predatory marketing, and they want people to get addicted to their drugs, and it's outrageous. And it's one of the things that really made me so upset when I started reading about it a couple of years ago, and was the incentive for Firetrap. The behavior of Big Pharma, not just that, but gouging on prices and withholding medications and a whole series of outrageous acts that I think they're at least complicit in doing. It is very upsetting, and I was very angry when I began to read about what Big Pharma does, and it should, and I thought maybe if I wrote about it in a book, people could be angry and demand changes in the law.
Absolutely, and I hope that people will, as they're reading this, and they look just at their own lives, how often doctors are just willing to write this prescription for pain pills that you don't need, that you can just sort of just grit your teeth a little bit, and you certainly don't need these high-powered drugs they give you without even thinking about it. And suddenly you have 30 pills of pain pills when maybe if you were in pain for a few days, they could have given you 5 pills.
Yes, or maybe just take a couple of aspirins.
Exactly. Yes, and of course, it comes back to all of the, you know, I remember when I was very young, I worked in a part-time in a doctor's office, and they would have these people, they would call them detail men, who would come in pushing the doctors with new drugs and giving them trips to, you know, the Bahamas or something, so that they would...
That's the way they do it. Usually, though, in my experience, when I've been in doctor's office, these representatives are acute young women. Pushing the drugs. That's the way. I must have seen a dozen of them over the years. That's the business model, and it's outrageous. I was prescribed OxyContin by a doctor. I never took it because I already knew that it was kind of dangerous, and I had open heart surgery, so I was in some pain. But I would prefer to live with the pain than the risk of the OxyContin, which I think in retrospect was the right thing to do. But that's the way the medicine is prescribed. If you know, some of these analgesics and these painkillers are quite okay under direct supervision of a doctor, but just to take a bottle home with you and take them whenever you get hurt or uncomfortable is really very dangerous.
It is, and I don't understand. Well, you know, the doctors aren't. You wish that your doctor wouldn't do such a thing, but they are incentivized.
Yes, absolutely. Nice dinners at expensive restaurants, among other things. Trips to the Bahamas or a nice hotel in Las Vegas. They do this all the time. And it's a standard operating procedure, and it isn't going to change. Nowadays, you know, the drug companies, the big pharma, advertise directly to the patients. I mean, you turn on CNN or, I assume, any other big network, and you'll get loads of ads for people who have some kind of disease or discomfort or medical condition, followed by an ad for some kind of drug, and then you see the same people again smiling broadly. This is advertising to the vulnerable public, which is, I think, outrage. But that's the way it's being done, and I don't see any change happening anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either. But that's why this book is so fascinating. Of course, when Marco gets involved in this and sees what's happening, he is just such a great character. And what I also love about him is, you know, usually in these kind of series, there's a sidekick, you know, somebody always a little, you know, usually a little stupider than the main character. But you have, I like that you have different sort of sidekicks, that you haven't sort of settled on one character.
Each book has a different partner, and they're quite I do that. I try to develop a new character in each novel.
Well,
my phone rang, but I'm just ignoring it.
that's okay. That happened. One day my phone went off while I was on air because, you know, you forget these things. Now, I have to do a commercial. Can you hold on and we can come back and talk more about your writing?
Okay. Well, let me just say I've got another interview at 11:40.
Okay, so let's just stay on for a few more minutes then, because
I'll
want to
stay on. We'll do.
Yeah. as much as we can, because as I said, what's so wonderful about your books and what's so wonderful about your writing is the clarity, the your grasp of course, you know, with your background, you're just naturally a writer, but there comes into this ability to paint the picture for the reader and take us into the situation, take us into the character. Now, how everybody always asks me, you know, they'll say I want to write a book. How do I do it? What do I start with? And I said, you know, a great plot would help. You know, that's you got to have a plot, and then yes, you have to have a great character. But also, it's the work behind it. It's the coming out with that first sentence. How many times, like, do they always just come to you straight away, or do you really work on coming out with just the right sentence at the beginning of a book?
Oh, I have to work on it very. I mean, I rewrite and edit myself constantly. Yes, it's a lot of work to do to get the words right, to get the description, the tone right. That's why it takes so long to write a book that you can read in, you know, in a day or two. Takes, you know, to me 6 months, a year to write.
And you know, when you're doing that, as you're writing and as you're rewriting, things, you know, come to you. I know that probably, you know the beginning of your book, and most often I think most writers actually know the end, although they say they don't, and it's going to sort of pan out. But so much happens in between that sometimes you have characters that work and sometimes you have characters that don't work. So how do you find that? Do you really hone things out? Do you land up with more pages, written pages, and then you have to cut it down?
Yes, to answer the first question, I always know how it starts, and I know how it ends, because I have the final scene pretty clearly in my mind. But the in-between part is the hard work, and I ride along, and I'm basically riding on the shoulders of Marco Zorn, and he gets into trouble, or he learns things, and sometimes the scenes really play out well. But sometimes they don't have to be rewritten, and there are times when I've just cut entire scenes because they're just not working, or they're not leading, going anywhere. So yes, it's a lot of attention, for me. I've heard of people, writers, who just write it and then the next day go right on and don't go back. And some very good writers can do that. That's not a criticism. For me, I need to rewrite and rethink the middle part of the book all the time.
Well, now, of course, you know, you were already well established in Washington. You already were in the writing world. But when you came out with this idea for the series, are you with the same agent who took you?
Yes, same agent. Yes. Well, I wrote the first novel, The Reflecting Pool, and then found the agent, and she took that on, and then I've been with her since.
And, of course, I noticed that you thanked her right in the beginning of the book.
That's right, yes, absolutely.
Which is great. You know, Mary Higgins Clark was on Joy on Paper many times, and she always put her acknowledgments at the beginning of the book, because in those days when she was started writing, they were always in the back. And
yes,
she really
that,
started
yes.
the trend, because she said, I owe them everything. You know, I wanted them to be up front and not sort of at the back where nobody notices them.
Yes, yes, right. By that time, you've gone on to another book. Yes, I think it's better to be in the front. That's why I do it that way.
Well, I noticed that right away. I think that is so wonderful. And I'm sure that she's listening in, and, you know, she must be so thrilled. Most people don't realize that an agent is there. They are actually worth their weight in gold, because
you're quite right. I couldn't agree more.
And they are there to get you, not just starting with your first book, but they want a long, many years.
Yes, that's right. Yes, of course. They're incentivized. Yes, But they're great help, vital help sometimes, because they know the business, they know the what the public is looking for, and so in a way that I couldn't possibly know.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I'm just so thrilled that you were on Joy on Paper today. It is a wonderful book.
Firetrap is, so much.
You know, it's a standalone. You can read it first, but if you read it first, you're going to go back, and you're going to read all the other books because they are just so good. And everyone, Marco Zorn is a character. As I said, he's different from all the other characters that I've knew, sort of all the new arrivals on the scene in the past I'm almost 9 years doing this. He stands out. He is outstanding, as are you, Otho.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate the kind words.
Well, it's been a joy to talk to you. I know that we'll have soon a release date for book 4, and you'll be back here on Joy on Paper, okay?
I hope so. I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay, what a wonderful guy. What a wonderful book. I'm telling you, all of his books are so great. And this is a character that once you start reading about Marco Zorn, you will want to continue. This is the beginning of what I'm sure is going to be. We're going to have 14 or 15 books, and then it will become a streaming video. Perhaps after around book 6, somebody will pick it up and it'll become a streaming video because it is actually made for streaming video because the scenery just in Washington, D.C., it's so exciting. It's so exciting. Okay, we're going to have a book buzz from Devon Miller. Then we're going to have a few commercials. We'll come back, and then I want to talk about Jim Lamb and a few other things.
Hey, everyone. It's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Already ranked as the number one new release in children's self-esteem books on Amazon is the new book called Buffalo Fluffalo, which was written by Emmy-nominated comedy writer Bess Kalb and illustrated by Aaron Cran. Meet Buffalo Fluffalo, who's honestly just had enough-a-lo. He tries to bluff and fluff his way into being bigger than he really is. Will the other creatures, who just want to be his friend, find out who he really is and perhaps what his true size is? This is a delightful story with clever wordplay, rhyme, and rhythm that encourages self-acceptance and showing that it's okay to be yourself. While Buffalo Fluffalo may have had enough-a-lo, I certainly can't get enough-a-lo of this story. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and it was such a pleasure to talk about a wonderful book that just came out, and I was so happy to talk to author Eskin about Fire Trap, and you can get that now online, and also he has a nice website, and it's Author Eskin, O-T-H-O. So Author Eskin, a nice name. Anyway, I wanted to mention the other day I had an interview, and last week, between the cold weather and running around and being outside, it's been too much. I don't like cold weather. Thinking of which, my brother, who is in northern Michigan, the Upper Peninsula, he is a Youper. We are Youpers, and Youpers are used to bad weather. I was actually born in a blizzard, and the doctor came to the house I think 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and he had to walk through the snow to get to the house, and he ended up spending the night because the blizzard was raging and he couldn't get out of our house. So I was born in a house in the Upper Peninsula, and now my brother just had 15 inches of snow, and he's sending me pictures of him with his snowblower. I think it's crazy. I don't know how he can take it, but anyway, so I got a little behind with all of this, and last week I was talking to an author, and I feel so bad. I actually gave the wrong title for his book, and he didn't correct me. I thought that was very nice. The name of the book and the author is Brian Nelson. It's The Great Unmaking, and it is book 3 in his Course of Empire series, The Great Unmaking. And I kept calling it The Great Unmasking. I don't know why. And he was so polite. He didn't say to me, excuse me, my book is The Great Unmaking. And it is a wonderful book. It's a sci-fi techno thriller, very timely. It's about AI. And he is the first person, you know, I don't know anything about AI except that somehow I have this instinctual dislike of it because I'm not sure I want artificial intelligence. I would like some real intelligence from people rather than AI, and particularly if it is a helpline. If I get one more of these helplines where they send me in loops and loops and they don't ever let me talk to a human being, I'm going to go crazy. So I really feel apologize to Brian Nelson. And again, I'm repeating the name, The Great Unmaking. And it is a wonderful series. It is fascinating. And he makes, he makes AI intelligible, or at least, and scary. It is a scary book. Sometimes people say, well, you need a horror story with, some teenagers running around and getting chopped up or something. But The Great Unmaking is really a horror story of the future. And it's beautifully written, and Brian is a wonderful guy, and I have to thank him so much for not correcting me on air, but I do want to say that the book is The Great Unmaking. Anyway, so that takes care of that business, and it takes care of also the business of being cold. I don't like being cold. I realize I don't like being cold, and even a little Arctic blast for 2 days will just get me off of my game. Now, I wanted to talk also a little bit about Jim Lamb. Jim Lamb has been a friend to Joy on Paper for years. I think he was one of my very first fans. Over the years, he has done so much for Joy on Paper, coming out with press releases, just encouraging me, because there have been times that I'm just been overwhelmed, but Jim has always been there encouraging me and complimenting me, and I appreciate everything that he does. And so I wanted to say that he has not only dedicated his book, Herding Butterflies, which is a book of eclectic assortment of poems, but he also very kindly was donated a portion of the sales to Joy on Paper to help me continue doing the program. So I want to encourage you to get his book. It's called Herding Butterflies. We'll play a little promo, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit more about him and about plans for the show.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Herding Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Herding Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Herding Butterflies.
And the holiday that is coming up in February, of course, is Valentine's Day. And the wonderful thing about Jim's poetry is that he has this wide range of subjects that he tackles. Some of his poems are sad, some of them are funny, some of them are silly. All of them are very touching, and there are poems about love in his Herding Butterflies. And I hope that you will get this book. You know, poetry is the key to really understanding words. And for all of you who are writing or who are dreaming of writing, and all nine of you NaNoWriMo winners for 2023, my gosh, it's 2024. So just a few months ago in November, nine of you completed NaNoWriMo, and you've asked me, and other people have been asking me, how do I get to be a better writer? And I am telling you, one of the ways to do it is to read poetry. It teaches you how to see words, how to visualize words on paper. Poetry is something special, and it is not something that is out of your reach. It is something that can change your life. One poem, and there are several in Herding Butterflies that I think if you read them, you will sort of have this little spark. You'll say, wow, that's something that happened to me. That's something, whether it's a story about his parents sitting on the porch, something that touches your heart and that you say, yeah, this is part of the human condition, part of being a human being, of sharing the same emotions, sharing the same pain, the same joys. And that comes through in Jim's poetry, and it comes through in poetry through the centuries. And you have such a wide range of poetry. There are, you know, many people will say, oh, well, I don't think I can do poetry or read poetry. And partly, of course, that comes from the fact that in schools these days, particularly these days, or perhaps maybe the past 40 years, somewhere around the 60s where they stopped teaching poetry, people lost that ability. Now, many times people will say, well, in the old days, they used to make you memorize a poem. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. They were such evil people. You know, and it's like years ago, not that many years ago. Well, yeah, about 40 years ago, you used to have to learn the times tables. You had to learn them. You had to get up and you had to recite them. Now, I'm telling you, it would really behoove you all. Don't you love that word, behoove? It would behoove you all to learn the timetables, because it is a powerful thing to have at your fingertips. I tell you, many people are, first of all, if you can do the timetable and you know that your whatever your favorite drink is, you go to whichever place you go for your favorite latte, your favorite slushy, your favorite whatever, a health mixed drink, one of those green drinks with with seaweed in it, wherever you go. I mean, if you go, you know, someplace, and nowadays I think, you know, I stopped buying those things because you can't buy those things. You can't afford it. But if you think about it, okay, if you think about it, let's say you spend $10 a day. And I know people who do spend $10 a day. They have a drink in the morning, a drink at lunch. They have a drink on the way home. If you add it up, it's $10 a day. Now, most people, I tell you, I checked this out with some people. I said, how much do you spend a year on just your drinks, just your fancy drinks, your fancy name drinks? Instead of, well, we're not going to take bottled water anymore. I think we have to get rid of bottled water, but and I don't anyway. But if you multiply 10 times 365 days or 366 this year, because we have, it's leap year, how much are you paying a year on stupid drinks, colorful drinks, drinks full of sugar? Do your multiplication. So it's the same way. If you can multiply, you'll save a lot of money. And if you know words, if you read poetry, you will expand your mind and you will become a better writer. So again, Herding Butterflies by Jim Lamb is available online on Amazon, and you can get it in Kindle, or I suggest you get it the paperback version. It's just 72 pages. But what's wonderful in that book, Jim also, again, something that's great for your mind, he does artwork, he does sketches, he does drawings, and even doodles, and that's included in the paperback version, and you will be impressed with his work. So again, Herding Butterflies by Jim Lamb is available on Amazon, and I hope that you will get it. And at the same time, not only will you be supporting Jim, you will be supporting Joy on Paper. And we need your support, because we want to, this year, 2024, it's crazy. I don't know. The pandemic years just got us all sort of messed up. I want to expand Joy on Paper. And one of the things that I want to do is, as we had last week, we had Bria Burton doing a special sci-fi program. And I want to do more of those. And I want also Devon Miller to do some kids programs, so that we have a bigger reach and that we can help more authors promote their books. And that's what we're doing here on Joy on Paper. So again, please get Jim Lamb's Herding Butterflies. You will love it. And we'll have some more of his poetry that we will be playing on the program, because I just love to hear it. And one of the things that you discover when you listen to his poetry, how he can take simple words. You don't have to know fancy words to write poetry. You don't have to be afraid of, you know, I don't know enough. Everybody knows enough to write a poem. It's just something wonderful. So, what else? Well, I was going to have Bill Larson on today, but things changed. And so we're going to have him on perhaps next week. And if you have any intellectual property questions, please send them to me. More and more people are coming out with ideas for products. And of course, that falls under trademarks. So he will talk about trademarks and copyrights and the importance also of being careful of what you say on social media. So there's so many things that Bill Larson can help us with to understand this mucky world of intellectual property and or lawsuits, which nobody wants. he wants a lawsuit. So that's why you have to be careful what you say online and on social media. You don't want to get yourself in trouble. And also, then, of course, when you're thinking about writing something, you also want to know if you're going to get yourself in trouble. And one of the things, please, please don't fall for any scams. Again, at the beginning of the year, I think we particularly are hit, all writers are hit constantly with, I don't know, all sorts of weird offers to help them. And nowadays, with the AI, they send out these emails really nonstop. I know that I have a special sort of email where I address that, where I sign up for things, and I get these, like, sometimes I'll get 8 or 10 requests for my book. They want my book because they want to turn it into a movie, and all I have to do is give them $3,335 and they will turn my book into a movie. That's not how it's done, believe me. When Hollywood calls, they don't call for a script from your book, for your book. You don't write, don't waste your time writing a script for your book, because Hollywood won't use it, because then they would hire somebody like me to just rip your amateur script up into little pieces. And that's not how it's done. So don't fall for a $3,335. That's a funny number. I've gotten two emails with that exact number. So they must be the same company, but they have different names and different websites. It's really weird. I don't know. Maybe they test marketed it. They thought that sounds good. It's not quite $3,500. A little less than $3,000. Now, if you have that kind of money. Give it to me, and I'll add an extra day here at Joy on Paper. That would be great. Now, that would be an investment, and I will then advertise your book like crazy. So anyway, just don't fall for any of those scams. This is one of the wonderful things about being a writer. You don't have to fall for this, because you should be wise enough and done your research, because that's what writers do. Writers do research, we hope, and discover that some of these websites that are sending you emails are phony, and they are from heaven knows what country, somewhere on the other side of the world. So be careful. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And everybody, stay warm. It's going to still be cold across the country. And just keep warm and be kind to people. Read a good book. Please, please read a good book. And you will then be a happier person, because you will have stayed inside and not frozen. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.